Hello, and thank you for joining me today on Geezers of Gear, episode number 211. Today's podcast is brought to you by Live Events Productions. Amplify every experience with Live Events, an end-to-end event production company offering off-the-chart solutions for your sound, light, video rigging, FX, and equipment rental needs. Live Events' full-service event production team is an assembly of companies, including Active Production and Design, Delicate Productions, Gemini Sound, Light and Video, Pyrotechnico, Pyrotechnico Effects, and Zenith Lighting. From intimate gatherings to stadium-sized spectacles, their brands produce the perfect mix of production elements to best serve your needs. Whether you are setting up for a singular event or a world tour, they have gear available for rent or purchase. Their precision-balanced approach seamlessly integrates sound, light, video, and effects to arrive at optimal solutions for your event or installation. Achieve audio awesomeness and visual brilliance, while the Live Events family of professionals provide an unforgettable service style and experience. If you dream it, they can do it. Allow Live Events to perfect your production from concept to curtain drop. Contact Live Events, your humble servants of Heck Yeah, today by visiting liveevents.com. And today's podcast is also brought to you by Stratum Productions. Stratum understands that successful events hinge on flawless execution. With years of experience in the audiovisual industry, Stratum Productions specializes in providing event planners with cutting-edge solutions that seamlessly blend technology and creativity. From intimate boardroom meetings to sprawling conventions, they're committed to delivering experiences that resonate and leave a lasting impact on audiences of all sizes. Stratum Productions truly do stand out above the rest when it comes to event production. To learn more about what Stratum does, who they are as a company, visit stratumpro.com. And of course, where would we be without Geezer's Grind Coffee? And so if you haven't tried it yet, go to coffeecult.com with K's, coffee with a K, cult with a K.com, and search for Geezer's Grind. It is the perfect blend. It's a mix of a dark roast that they call Road Dog and a medium blend coffee. I mixed it myself at home, came up with this perfect solution, had them blend it for us and call it Geezer's Grind. And the best part is that Coffee Cult are donating 100% of the proceeds from all of the Coffee Cult Geezer's Grind coffee that's sold to Robe Backstage, who supports individuals in our industry who need help. So please go to coffeecult.com and search for Geezer's Grind. Not only are you helping the industry and a great charity, but you are also getting really great coffee. And I know that I'm probably a little bit biased, but I'm telling you, this is great coffee. So go to coffeecult.com and order Geezer's Grind today. Episode 211. I'm looking forward to today's episode. Actually, a good friend of mine in the industry, a person that all of you know as well. And so I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun. He's been on before. And I think we're going to talk a lot about LDI, which just happened, was it last week already? And I am really jealous because for the second time ever, I didn't go to the show. I just had to keep my head down and do a lot of the hard work right now that we're transitioning not only our website, but a lot of things about my company right now and making it much better. And so, yeah, just head down, really focused on the hard work. And I had to miss the show and I'm sad for it because seeing all the pictures, especially like I said last episode, the Cosmo pictures, Cosmo had a takeover of Facebook. And, you know, just really bummed me out that I wasn't there. You know, a lot of really cool new gear. And of course, the people. We go to trade shows not just for the gear, but for the people, mostly for the people, I think. So, anyways, yeah, we'll be talking about that a lot today. As far as my company that I was mentioning, so just a quick update on GearSource, still plugging away. We did a deal with a global digital marketing company who is going to be doing some massive work for GearSource, but especially for our sellers, really promoting their inventory on a global level, getting products sold quicker, and just doing a better job getting the information out there. So looking forward to that. Lots of other partnerships that I will be soon to announce. We're making a lot of things happen right now as we needed to. We had a really rough year. And so some things that will be announced in the coming weeks. And I mean, gear, the other thing is gear, and maybe Chris will talk about this. I'm sure he'll have the opposite statement to make, but I'm seeing gear is finally freeing up sort of on a global level, and we're really starting to see gold in the listings. I mean, we're seeing stuff that 6 months ago was a dream. Today, we're seeing it often. We're seeing lots of really great L-Acoustic stuff, Digico consoles, Allen & Heath consoles, MA3s that I know there's a back order for a year and a half or whatever. We're getting some that are like barely used kind of stuff, more MA2s. So yeah, I mean, just a lot of really great listings are popping up now. So if you haven't been on GearSource lately, shameless plug, please visit gearsource.com today. And I'm kind of bummed again. I know I've been bummed a lot on this call, but I missed the Willie Williams interview today. So we're recording this on, what day is it? Tuesday, Wednesday. It'll be played next week, but we're recording it a week earlier, whatever that was. But Willie Williams was today. I had a meeting that was supposed to end, and it didn't until probably 45 minutes into that Willie Williams thing. So I missed it, and I was really kind of looking forward to it. Willie's a very talented and smart individual. I wanted to hear him talking about, you know, the run in the Sphere and their design in the Sphere and how, you know, the complexities of designing a show for the Sphere and la, la, la. So bummed about that. Hopefully you got to see it. I'm sure it'll be out as a recording or on YouTube or something. So hopefully anyways. And LDI, as I said, we're going to talk about it. I don't know that I have any hot gossip in the industry right now. Not really. I mean, nobody's really been sold or bought or anything that I've seen recently. Nobody's firing half their staff. Nobody's hiring double their staff. So, yeah, I mean, it seems to be status quo right now, but I'm sure Chris will have some rumors having been at the show in Vegas last week. So, yeah, Chris McMean is coming back on to Geezers of Gear episode 211. He was on the show almost exactly a year ago at LDI in Vegas, of course. And I remember it well because Chris was super hungover. Actually, I think I called him and said, are we doing this? And he had slept in or something, or maybe he was in the Tesla on the way over to the convention center. But he wasn't feeling real great. I think he hadn't had much sleep, which is an LDI thing. Apparently that happens. A lot has changed in a year, and I look forward to this chat. So let's go ahead and get it going. Hey, Chris, what's happening?
Hey, Marcel.
When you're looking sideways, I can tell you're like typing quotes and stuff. Ooh, what can I take from PRG today? I can see.
Actually, they've been getting quite a few lately.
They've been getting quite a few?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they will.
Yeah, but they are the big dog.
They're still a big dog. I don't know. Are they the big dog? Are they still the big dog, or is Four-Wall?
Yeah, they're still the big dog. No, Four-Wall would like to be the big dog, but they're certainly not.
Yeah.
And you got to realize Four-Wall's only in the U.S. and Europe. PRG's in Asia.
Yeah.
You know, all over Europe.
Is Four-Wall, do they have any Canadian offices yet? I don't even know. I can't think.
They do not really have a Canadian office.
No, I didn't think so. I didn't think they had any Canadian locations.
We're the big dog in Canada.
That's true. We're
bigger than Solotech. They got video and sound. Yeah, we're bigger.
One, they just got another big investment I saw from some French-Canadian company that just put another gazillion dollars into Solotech. So nice. There you go.
They're buying new gear.
They're buying new gear, supposedly, or more companies, probably. That's what these people do. They go and take on investment, and then they buy a bunch of companies. And then hopefully they sell all the mismatched gear on GearSource.
Yeah, I know, right? That's good money for you.
Well, sometimes. It's, you know, honestly, like the used gear business has been so weird this year, especially because manufacturers are so aggressive. and manufacturers have overbuilt. So, you know, they're going out and cutting deals with everyone, with whether it's Christie Lights or even smaller companies, they're cutting deals and
to block the used sales.
Well, they're not blocking used sales. It's just they got to sell their shit, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's been.
Wish car companies were like that.
They're not yet.
No. There's still a lot of used cars in the lots. Not as many new cars.
Oh, I thought for a while there, though, they had gotten really, really aggressive to a point where it was cheaper to buy a new car than a used car.
No, not unless you were ordering. If you wanted something off the lot, they were still marking it up over MSRP.
Really? Today?
So they're like, okay, MSRP is 32 grand on this car. You're going to pay 37 if you want it. I only got two left in the lot and there's four people looking at
it. That blows me away. You know, like, I know 2 grand over sticker doesn't sound like a lot, but what's going on? My microphone is pausing. Our internet's been goofy today. You know, I won't pay over sticker for a car. No. Oh, did you lose me? Have I lost you? Are we still here?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I won't pay over sticker on a car. And I got a call from a friend of mine in Canada a couple weeks ago. Good friend of mine, an oil and gas guy, loads of cash. And he says, hey, Marcel, do you have any friends in the Porsche world? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, like at a dealership. And I said, yeah, I have a guy who's a GM at a Porsche dealership. He's really good guy. I've known him in the racing world for ages. What do you need? And he says, I want one of these 911 GT RS. And I want a European delivery on it. You know what that is, right?
Yeah, that's my dad did that. You go pick it up in Europe and get a little free trip to Europe and don't pay sales tax.
Well, and you drive around Europe for a while and then you drop it off at the port and it ships over. Really fun. And, you know, you get to drive a Porsche on the Autobahn and stuff or whatever, right? But anyways, so I said, yeah, let me give him a call. And I called my buddy and he goes, well, technically I can't ship one to Canada, but I can get him one. Like I can get him an allocation. They're hard to get. I said, okay, so, you know, what's that going to cost him? And I got to remember, did he say, he said $250 over sticker.
Wow.
And I think it's a $300,000 car.
Yeah,
so it's 550 grand for a freaking Porsche 911. And so, you know, I called my buddy back and he's very wealthy, but he's also, as much as it sounds crazy to say he's cheap, you know, he's like, 250, that's insane. I thought it'd be 150. And I'm like, so you'd pay 150 over sticker for that car? And he goes, oh, hell yeah, right now. I'd do it right now. And I'm like, man, you know, I'm in the wrong industry, I guess, because that ain't happening.
Yeah, no. And I don't know how much you talked to Christopher out on the West Coast, but he bought like a Bronco and a bunch of other stuff, and then he just resold them. Yeah, Asen, because
he sold, you know, his Bronco?
One of them. He got like two of them, and he sold one of them.
Oh, right. Yeah, because he, you know, I follow his drama on Facebook where he's always complaining about everything. Either his Mexican neighbor or his Broncos, the Ford dealership, right?
Or California just in general. I'm like,
yeah, California in general. California
yet? Like, yeah. Everybody else jumped ship. Like, why are you still there?
I know it's funny, though, because, like, I've known Chris for so long. Yeah. I can tell how many Jägermeisters he's had based on what he's saying on Facebook. And so I know he just gets pissed and then sits there at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning typing these long diatribes on Facebook. But yeah, I remember he was waiting on a Bronco forever. Like, it was supposed to be here in 6 months and it's already 9 months. And what's going on? These people are crazy. Rah, rah, rah. And so then another one popped up. So he bought that one. And then, of course, like a few weeks later or whatever, his other one came in. Yeah. And so, yeah, he ended up with two.
But then he made like 13 grand on the resale.
He sold both of them or just one of them?
Just the one.
Oh, okay. He's still driving those things. I mean, they're nice, the Broncos. They, I wouldn't
pay 13 over sticker for it, though.
Hell no. Like, but
forget that.
But you know, the thing is, like, you got to do what he did. You got to do all the fancy aftermarket shit on them, because like, yeah, just stock, yeah, they don't do anything for me. But then when you do all that sort of Jeep Rubicon stuff to it, where you make it look mean, and it's still only like 200 horsepower or something, but it looks mean, you know. Speaking of cars, what happened with your Tesla? Is it done? Is it fixed?
It's fixed. Yep. They, so I guess, my motor died. I only have one motor in that one.
Okay.
And, the motor died. It still got me home, you know, but then basically I had to have it towed out of the garage, and, they took it in. I looked up the error code, and it said it was a, it was just a bad battery heater blower.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, no problem. That'll be done in a day. So I called them. They're like, eh, your main motor's dead. I was like, oh, that's a million mile motor. I only got 150,000 miles out of it. They're like, yeah, well, happens to about 6%, and you're in the lucky 6%.
How the hell can they rate a motor for a million miles? You know what I mean? Like, are they doing some kind of rapid testing on it or something where they're
They basically simulating run 24 hours a day. Yeah, they run them 24 hours a day for...
I remember when I first started selling commercial LED stuff, and they were rating this stuff for like 10 years or 100,000 hours or whatever they were doing, right? And I was like, who's testing this stuff? You know, like, LEDs haven't been out for 10 years or 50,000 hours or 100,000 hours, you know, like, who's testing it? And, we do simulated testing. Yeah, okay. Sure you do. But the problem is the LEDs will last an eternity, but the power supply and all the other shit around it fails.
And the coatings, colors will fade.
Yeah,
and heat for 5 years.
You probably never got involved at all with like the Cree commercial stuff, but Cree had this thing called an LR6. It was the first LED downlight that was ever commercially available. And they bought the company from a small company out of North Carolina or something called LLF. And so they bought that company, and we were a Cree dealer at the time, LED Source was. And so I did my whole house, and I had ceilings in my house that were like 30 feet high and stuff. And I did my whole house with these Cree LR6s, and it had this really cool technology in it where they were using lower binning, less expensive LEDs, and they were blending in red. And then they had this little, in the lens, they had a little color temperature sensor that would just boost the reds when it needed to. So if the red was fading over time or whatever, or if it was too bright, like, they could change the amount of red to basically adjust the color temperature in the thing. And it was a brilliant idea. But what happened is this freaking chip failed in half of the Cree lights, and all your downlights go to pink. You know, and it's like, what the heck is going on in my house right now? And, oh, no problem, Marcel. We'll send you all new ones. Yeah, but I got to get an electrician with like a 30-foot ladder or a man lift or something to change them, you know? So it's like, you know, $125 an hour or something to change out. Probably at the time it was 60 downlights or something like that. And, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a cheap...
Yeah, I mean, these are the conversations we have with the manufacturers all the time. They're like, oh, we'll just send you this new piece and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we have 3,000 of those.
Yeah. Or it's rigged on the top of the Statue of Liberty or something, you know? Yeah.
Even if I nicely say an hour piece, that's, you know, that's an enormous amount of cost that you're just throwing at the dealers.
Yeah.
You know, with no compensation. I mean, I think that was one of the things that really damaged Clay Packy when the whole Mythos product came out.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and people weren't, people are still bitter about that. You know, they bought Mythos. They love the light coming out, but lamps exploding, heat issues. And then even after the upgrade, they were still having issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. I think Bob Gordon actually talked.
Company, so it's like,
yeah, I think Bob Gordon talked about that on my podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Because he took the heat for that because he was the distributor still at the time, right? And he said it was just an absolute nightmare because people were blaming him, you know.
Yeah.
And it's well, because you're the guy I know, right? Yeah.
So, you know, but he doesn't have the money to say, okay, I'm going to give you back, you know, $1,000 a fixture for your.
Well,
pain.
Even if he does, it's not his. It's not really his responsibility, right? It's the manufacturer's responsibility. So, and I know these Italian companies. Oh, it'll be okay. It's only you. It happens to nobody else. Sure. Yeah, I love Italians, and they drive me crazy too. You know, I shouldn't be so general and say like it's the whole breed of Italians, but I should say Italian lighting manufacturers, but audio as well. Audio are similar. I've had similar experiences with audio, and you know
they make really amazing products, and then, but they have, you know, I mean. It's not just them at the moment, though. I mean, I'd say it's Europeans.
Yeah.
You know, the
but
Europeans.
Cars, too. Like Italian cars are similar, you know, like maybe Europeans. I think Germans are a little more, let's fix this right now, you know, like it feels to me like Germans
we're coming over to your house. We're going to reinstall.
Yeah, we're
going to
bring.
While you sit there.
Sprinter vans and with guys in, you know, in matching uniforms, and we're going to fix it. But no, I mean, Italians, lighting people that I know, like especially guys like Fausto and stuff, they're so passionate about what they're building. And but just somehow sometimes we miss out on the longevity side of things. And I know that's changed over the years. Claypaky, I'm sure, is a lot more reliable today than they were when I was selling that stuff.
Oh, yeah. But
everything is. Yeah, everything is. No, I mean, that's the weird thing about moving lights.
And the amazing thing is that, like, as I've looked at the age, as we've aged the products, the European stuff holds up so much better.
Oh, does it really?
Oh, my God. I can't even tell you.
Huh.
Like, it definitely, you know, I definitely get at least double the life out of all my European products than I get out of products from other places in the world.
Interesting.
And
are there actually European products still?
Yeah. There are not as many as there used to be, but
I know there's European brands, you know, but
and even their stuff that's made in other places.
Yeah.
You know, no, while the quality is probably a little bit better, it definitely does not last as long.
Well, know. I went to the Ayrton headquarters in Paris one time, and just, I don't know what, 3 years ago, like right after COVID, probably 2021. And which you would call during COVID. I call it after COVID, of course, because I live in Florida. Weird. Like July was after COVID, July 2020.
6 months of COVID and you were done.
Yeah.
All the people had passed away already.
Yeah, they were all gone. Or they moved to New York and got shoved into old people's homes and Cuomo killed them. All right, there. That's it. That's our political discussion for today. We're done. Yeah. But anyways, I you know, they were showing me. I don't remember what the new light was at that time. I think it was the Domino or something. I don't know. They were showing me their new light, and they opened it up, and I hadn't seen the inside of a light since probably a Mac 2000. Right? Like, I don't look at the insides of lights. You know, it's just not my gig. And I was just like, whoa. Like, first of all, how much shit they actually had jammed in there.
Oh, yeah. They just aired to packs it in there.
How really well did. The stuff is built. Like, it just looks like a precision piece of medical equipment or something, you know? And
it's really engineered.
So I asked the engineer.
To me, is sort of the, you know, the
cat's,
you know,
meow.
It's definitely the fancy brand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice. It's nice stuff. I, you know, the thing I keep saying to people is everything's good now. Like, you know, and we'll talk about LDI here in a minute, but
order stuff off. I mean, I'm getting calls now like, hey, I got a dozen lights that we ordered off Amazon.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
And I'm like, just throw them out.
Let me finish this Ayrton story. So I had an engineer sitting there with me taking this thing apart and so impressed and showing it to me like I know what I'm doing, right? Right. And I said, so tell me this, what breaks? And he just looked at me like I had three heads, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, excuse me? And I said, what breaks? And he says, nothing. And I said, but like if I'm stranded on an island and I have a small generator and four Ayrton lights and I need a spare parts package because I'm going to have parties every weekend, what do I need? I don't know. Maybe one of this. I don't know if you want maybe one of this, but that's about it. You know, like he couldn't think of a spare parts package for these lights, right? And I was like, wow, that's incredible. Because I remember back in the day, you know, I'd be like, well, you need two power supplies, you need three of these, you need four of these, couple stepper motors. And so.
I mean, we still, most of what the tours do nowadays is they just take full spare fixtures.
Oh.
And then if they have a broken unit, they'll cannibalize it. But I tend to not send parts packages out as much as we used to. I know on a lot of tours, you know, you'd have like a spare color module, you have a spare framing module, you know, and you'd have a, maybe a spare ballast if you had a bunch of lights, you know, you just cover yourself. Nowadays, it's just, hey, let's throw one or two more spare fixtures there. And then we can swap much quicker. You know, like the timelines have shrunk even everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's all gotten, it's all gotten better. That's for sure. It's the moving light business, you know, is from a standpoint of product. Like if you go, like somebody posted a picture
even 10 years ago,
somebody posted a picture at the ADJ booth, at LDI. And he said something like, this is American DJ. And it was like just this killer picture of these killer fixtures. Right. And it's like, this is American DJ. And I mean, everybody's good now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And no, certainly they definitely, better. I mean, we actually even have American DJ in, you know, in our core inventory now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, and, I mean, we need four lights and, you know, a stick of truss to send out to a wedding or something. Like I'm sure they do just fine.
Yep. They do fine on a little beam light, you know?
So, you know, I said it in the intro and I'll say it again. So you were on my podcast a year ago at LDI and, I think I had to wake you up. Didn't I? Like, didn't I have to give you a wake up call? You had just gotten home like 2 hours earlier or something, or back to your hotel.
It was one of those nights. It was definitely a late night, but I walked in, I got there. I was amazed that you guys were able to grab coffee beforehand.
Yeah.
I made it. Like, you didn't give me a wake-up call or anything. I was there, but
I think I did. I think I called you in. I think I
that's
called
the one. Either. That's the one we recorded. Well, we thought we recorded, but you had forgotten to hit the record button.
It's happened like twice, and the other one was Eric Loader. So you're in good company, at least.
Oh, well, that's
good. Yeah. That doesn't happen. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. I've grown up. I've grown as a, what do you call it? Podcaster or whatever. So LDI was last week, of course. And again, I said in the intro, my second time ever in the history of LDI that I didn't go. And, it seems like I missed a really good show.
You definitely missed a good show. I mean, I think it's the best probably in the last, you know, 7-8 years.
I mean, one of the things,
date change helped a lot.
What change? Date change?
The date change from November to December.
So do you think they'll try and keep that date? Well, actually, I guess the F1 race is going to be there every year. So, so they'll have to keep that date.
I don't know. Is it
2024.
LDI 2024. Yeah. So the announcement for the dates for 2024 are, the expo, the 8th to the 10th.
Oh, in December again.
Yeah, in December again.
You know, the thing I don't like about that is I used to go to LDI because it was always the weekend before Thanksgiving. And then I'd leave Vegas and go up to my house up in Canada. And it was a 1 hour or an hour and a half flight instead of flying 6 hours from Florida to get up there. Oh, and, so I'd go up and I'd ski for a few days, spend Thanksgiving in Canada and then come back to Florida, but doesn't work when it's in December.
Damn. No, I was going to say you can go up there and do Christmas.
Yeah. I've done it a couple times. It's friggin' cold. I mean, I've done it a bunch of times when I was a kid, but yeah, it can be bitter. It's been, I'm sure it's global warming, but it's been very warm so far. Like they just got their first nasty cold spell a couple days ago. Prior to that, it was, you know, 50, 60 degrees and stuff. It was crazy warm still.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas this year was in the 50s to 60s, and New York at the same time was in the 50s to 60s. So weird, it was
Yeah, weird. And Florida, I think, was probably in the 50s to 60s, too. Like, we had a cold front last week. So yeah, which hotel did you stay at, Virgin or Resort World?
I'm still a Virgin guy. I have not made the swap to Resorts World. Although apparently the bar there was kicking insane. I did one night at the bar there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'll go for an hour or two. I was there till like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh boy.
And then the second night I was like, yeah, I'm just not doing it. I don't like the bar at Resorts World.
Yeah.
I can't. The lighting is horrible. The sound is horrible. I lost my voice because like you basically have to yell in the you have to yell at people for them to hear you. The acoustics are just, there's like marble everywhere. So everything just bounces around. It's crazy. Yeah,
that sucks.
I do wish people would find a better bar. You know, I think we're hoping when the Hard Rock comes back, there's a Circle Bar there.
Yeah. Oh, the Hard Rock's coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. They knocked down Treasure Island or something, or the Mirage. Yeah. One of them.
Yeah. I think it's Mirage they took over.
Yeah.
And they're going to put a giant guitar thing there. I'm right, just hoping they do the Circle Bar again. You know, I like Virgin as far as location goes. I like that there's a good gym in there.
Yeah.
I like that I can completely avoid the casino. So if you stay in the HRH Tower, you can, you know, you can park right there yourself.
Yeah.
Or valet it. Valet's free. And you can just, you know, go down to your car, drive away without walking through the casino or dealing with anything.
Yeah, I mean, I stayed there last year. I liked it. I thought it was good. Yeah. You know, the bar was kind of meh. It wasn't so exciting, you know. And, you know, there was one night that it got pretty weird. There was a weird show in there or something. And
the
clientele was a little different. It was definitely a bit different. But yeah, I like that place. I think it's nice. And it, you know, changed the name, changed the colors and stuff. It still felt like I was walking into the Hard Rock just because, you know, the entrance was similar and that kind of thing. You still knew your way around, you know.
Yeah, but, and there were a few people there. The Vera Lake guys stayed there. Mm. Few LDs I know were there. So, you know, I just meet them down at the bar for a drink, which is great. Didn't have to yell. Yeah. I didn't have to deal with the horrible lighting. I didn't have to go over the Resorts World and then, you know, pay for parking or whatever.
You know, the other thing at the Virgin is, what's his name? The one bartender was at the Circle Bar. He's been there for like 15 years or something.
It's all the original Hard Rock people there. You know?
Yeah, that blew me away because I was like, do I know you? And he goes, of course you do. You've spent so much time and so much money with me in the past. Of course you know me.
Yeah. And he knows me and he knows what I drink. So he's always like, here, Chris.
That's cool. That's cool / bad.
Is
when people know your drinks, it's kind of a little bad. Yeah. It's a little bad.
I'm recovering now.
Yeah. Yeah. It took you a week.
Yeah.
So give me some LDI stories. Like what was cool? What was exciting?
I think the gangbuster of the whole show was the new Little Martin One.
Yeah.
People are losing their minds about that. It's like a little Fresnel fixture. Same wattage as the original Aura. Probably about half the weight.
Yeah.
You can like pick it up. I can pick it up with a finger.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I mean it. It seems super cool, that thing. And it's cheap. It's like $2,000 retail or something.
Yeah. And, you know, it's got a, It's got a zooming Fresnel lens, and then it's got the Aura pixels in it, so you can do some cool stuff. And I mean, every LD I've showed it to, I mean, we saw it at Plaza in September, which is where, I mean, mostly at LDI, I'm meeting people, not looking at gear so much. So I get a kind of preview of a lot of this gear, but we saw it there, and it was, I was sitting with Ken Billington, and he was like, "Buy 1,000, Chris." He's like, "I'm gonna put them on every sidelight tower. I'm gonna put them in, pick up, spots that I need lights all around the stage." And he's like, "I love the Fresnel lens, very theatrical."
I think it was a super smart move for them to do that. Like
Well, again,
smaller,
to me, it's
lighter.
something new. Like, it's not the same. It's not a me-too fixture. It's something new, and it's something different than what people have been seeing. So.
Well, and not everybody needs a friggin' 30,000 lumen, LED wash light. Like sometimes you need something smaller, lighter, and more of them and whatever. And I like that little four bar thing that they did. And
I mean, the attachments that they built for that, so you can like rig it into a wall, you can hang it from a ceiling, you can put it on
smart
a
as hell.
pull bar, is super smart.
I'm sure that like, Ayrton and probably American DJ, or not American DJ, Elation and Chauvet were all standing there going, "Fuck. Damn it. God damn it."
It's definitely the, it was the show banger, and it won the award, and I'm gonna see a bunch of them on a lot of projects.
You know, it's funny because right when I saw it, I was thinking, I wonder how many Huntley's gonna order. I wonder how many Huntley's ordering, and it's got to be thousands.
A lot.
When does it ship? Is it shipping already?
January.
Oh, okay. Cool. And it seems like it's well built. Like when you pick it up, it doesn't feel cheesy or.
Nope. It's pretty solid.
Very
I mean, I'll
cool.
see what happens when I toss it off a lift.
I think it was a brilliant move. Like I think Martin definitely was pretty smart with that one. So what else? I heard JDC2 was really cool.
JDC2 is cool. I mean, it's really just the big brother to the JDC1, but it's a lot more blinder, meaning, you basically you can run video through it, but then you can also be, be a blinder. I think most of the things I've seen people do with it is they kind of do atmosphere stuff, and then they use it more as a blinder floodlight. But we've run I've worked with people who have run video through the JDC1, and they look great. I mean, you're fairly far away. A lot of people were like, "Oh, the JDC2, like the pixel is too wide. All the video screens nowadays are much tighter." I'm like, they don't need to be any tighter. They're 20 feet, 30 feet away from the very first patron who's looking at it. You're not looking at it up close,
Well, I mean,
So,
also, it's not really built to compete with a video screen. Like that's sort of an it can also do. Like that's not its core function is to put a bunch of them together
And
and
I don't see it,
watch a football game on them.
like nobody's going to put the football game on it. Nobody's going to put the iMag on it. They're going to put, funky,
Content,
cool
video content.
imagery content, to accent the performance. They're not using it for iMac.
So what about Avo on the Robe booth? How was that? Was it cool? Like, was it busy?
I mean, it
Did
was
they?
great to see Roby with a decent, I mean, Avo Lights with a decent sized booth. They have a lot of good products, and I think Americans miss out on it because, they don't usually do a very big booth. They show whatever the current console is. This, they had a whole bunch of consoles there. Brad was there. And
Well, I
I think it
mean,
was a smart purchase for Roby
yeah, so do
to
I.
pick up a console, pick up a console brand and, really a legendary historic rock console. Like,
Yeah.
it's, you know, I still know a lot of the old rock guys just love those consoles. And
yeah,
you know,
no, I think it was a decent move. Like there is an argument that says, you know, that customers don't want to buy consoles and moving lights from the same company, you know, and that everyone's always got this fear that the company's going to sort of lever those things and try to use them against you. Well, I'll give you the lights, but you got to take the console. And I just don't see it, you know, like people
maybe,
are going to buy
maybe
the consoles.
10 years ago. Yeah. Maybe 10 years ago. I mean, I think, Evo kind of has a following built. It's not like they're pushing, you know, Roby's going to push a new console on people.
Well, I think they will a little bit because I think Evo's been underrepresented for a long time, obviously, right? And like even just the fact that like they've got this D9 and they've got one guy basically selling it and supporting it for the whole country and, you know, running around doing demos. And I mean, you know, like how are you going to compete like that when you've got, you know, ACT with the MA and Elation with the Obsidian stuff. And so, yeah, I think they should do okay. You know, and I know the price of the company wasn't very high. I was actually in talks with a couple of other companies who were looking at it. And, and you know, the price wasn't that high for whatever reason. The owners wanted out pretty badly. And it needed to go to a bigger home. Like you needed better manufacturing and bigger manufacturing and stuff like that for that.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely needed support. You know,
yeah.
And here in the U.S., they definitely on the support side still have a long way to go.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And well, I think that
I'm
they
sure
can
staff it up.
Yeah, they can staff it up, and you know, and they have some great staff there already. You know, like Marty and Craig and. Those guys will definitely sell the hell out of that console.
Yeah.
You know, but they're still going to be breaking into the market. What else? What else did I see?
Speaking of Ayrton, the Revali, did you like it?
Revali is a nice light.
Yeah.
I think it's really nice. I think the Broadway guys need to look at that light and, you know, consider it. I definitely think it does everything, you know.
It seems to be a trend.
This smaller, which is nice.
Yeah, like this is what I've been hearing is
IP, which is great. You know,
I've been hearing a lot of this sort of rumble about, you know, lumens per gram or whatever lumens.
Per pound.
Lumens per pound. And I think that's a cool thing because, I mean, let's face it, we went too far the other direction there for a while. You know, it's only 120 pounds. Or no, they don't even quote them in pounds. They quote them in kilos because it sounds smaller, right?
So they sound smaller,
only 65 kilos, you know. Yeah, but that's 135 pounds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I think people got a little nuts with, first it was channels because, well, now all of a sudden we've got 10 universes. We can use them, you know. And then it was just weight and, you know, with the IP fixtures, the number of screws going into them, you know, that you had to take out a bazillion screws.
Like
to
changing a gobo in some of the IP fixtures is, you know, like an hour long process.
Oh my
God. And you know, I mean, one of the manufacturers was showing us on their IP light, it's four screws to get to the gobos now.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Who's
Thank
that?
You. Can't tell you.
Oh, you forget.
There were some lights we had to sign NDAs for. So.
Oh, were there? Oh, cool. Yes. Interesting.
So,
yeah, there's always some of those
coming down the line, which are exciting. You know?
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's good because it got boring for a while with moving lights. I think like everybody was good. Everybody had the same thing. We got a beam, we got a wash, we got a spot, we got a profile, we got a, everything was good. Everybody had the same basic lineup. And then it was, now we have IP range of the exact same lights, but now they're IP. And
eye candy stuff, you know, I definitely think, I mean, what Martin's done so well in that one is they've mixed the eye candy stuff with an actual fixture that's good at lighting, as opposed to just an eye candy fixture that doesn't do a good job of lighting subjects, you know.
Yeah.
And
but there's going to be a two. I wonder what the two is going to be. And the three.
It's just going to be slightly bigger.
They've just started all over. Instead of the 500, 600, 700, 1200, whatever, now they're the one, two, three, four. They reset. They did the reset.
When I saw it at Plaza, they hadn't named it yet. So they were, you know, they were looking for names. And I wanted to name it the Peon.
But yeah, instead of P1, Peon.
No, actually, P1 would have been what you put on the fixture, right?
It's yeah.
The Peon 1, so P1.
Oh, that's funny. So,
but that's you'd spell funny. It, you know, P-O-N. O-N.
Yeah. I don't know that that's a great idea. Did I ever tell you that I named the Mac? I named, like,
oh,
Mac,
no.
The name Mac. So
no.
When Peter Johansson came over with the original, the real dog moving light, the Mac, I don't even want to say this out loud in case Huntley's listening.
The 218?
He'll jump through and kill me. No, the first moving head they did, the Mac 1200.
The first. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was like a dog among dogs. I mean, that was
wasn't
the biggest
dog. Wasn't the PAL? There was a PAL 1200.
Yeah, there was a PAL 1200. I and named that one, too. You know, I like when you're in a room full of Danes, it's easy to be the most creative one, you know? So I would just go, how about we call it blah? But anyways, they were creating a new light and they were telling me the features of it. And it was basically going to be an automated color wash. And so I said, call it Mac. And they said, what is that? We want to call it the Martin color wash with automation or something. And I said, no, Martin automated color wash, Mac. And they said, ah, this is good. And so it ended up being Mac, and who knew it was going to stick for freaking
no residuals or whatever. You're supposed to make residual deals with that, but
well, I got an Acura NSX. They bought me an NSX in 1997 or something. They bought me an NSX because I sold, like, it's a funny story, but you know, this PAL thing wasn't selling real well, other than to Huntley. And you probably still put them on shows, don't you? You probably still got a warehouse full of them.
No PALs left.
But, you know, so Peter came over and he said, we want to sell 400 PALs by October 1st or whatever. I think it was when he was going public and he needed to pump the thing up a little bit, right?
Right.
And I said, no, he said, we want to sell 400. And I said, I think we can do that. You know, and I'm thinking within the next 12 months, it's like, right, you know, mid August or something. Right. And he goes, okay, 400. And I'll tell you what, if you sell 400, I'll buy you that car that you've been looking at. And I said, the Acura. And he goes, yep, I'll buy you that car. And I go, for real? And he goes, yep. I said, okay, done. I'll do it. And he goes, okay, by October 1st. And I'm like, what? Like, I've got 6 weeks to sell 400 of the worst moving lights in the world, you know, really? And we did it. I mean, we sold like 430 or something. And, you know, nice. He didn't put in a stipulation that they couldn't be returned later. And so a few did get returned, but yeah. No, I mean, those were interesting days. But I'm so jealous of guys who sell moving lights or girls who sell moving lights now, because like I said, everything's so damn good now. We had to sell RoboScan 1220s against Cyberlights. You know, try doing that.
Yeah. No, I remember. I remember when we opened up as a Martin dealer in Boston, Massachusetts, and we were fighting the big high-end guy in town. And just
wasn't
chipped
an easy
away.
Fight.
No, wasn't an easy fight. But it shows, to me, it shows you again, it's the people more than the...
Of course. Yeah, I mean, that was a tough one, though. The 1220 against the Cyberlight was a tough one. The 218 or 518 or whatever against the Intellibeam.
The 518 was the first one that I felt was
sort of real.
Yeah. The 518 was the beginning of that.
The gobos were like this big. I remember going to Apollo and I'm like, I need a logo. And they're like... What size? And I said, Yeah, it's that big. And they're like, you know, we can't make the metal thick enough that it'll hold together. Like, it's just too small. But, yeah. What about any funny stories from LDI that you're allowed to tell?
I don't know that I have any really funny stories. I mean, every year I kind of plan my dinners out with clients. Like, you know, I do one each night that I'm there. So I have like 10 to 15 clients. So I had a full night on the last night. And by the time I got there, everybody had canceled or changed their plans or couldn't make it or something. So like I had booked a reservation, you know, at my favorite French place, put down a $900 deposit, and I had nobody coming when I got there.
Oh, no.
So I was a little freaked out. One of my clients.
So Herrick showed up and you drank expensive freaking French wine and.
We ended up filling it up. By the end of the show because enough people were there. You know, like I didn't even know everybody was coming. So, you know, I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? What are you doing the last night?
That's funny.
We were able to fill it up. But yeah. It was definitely like, you know, and again, like that really hasn't happened to the show. Usually my dinners are booked in advance. Yeah. Everybody knows they're going and that's it. Nothing changes. Yeah.
What, you do one big dinner?
I do one each night. So.
Oh, one each night. Okay.
Yeah. That's so I got to entertain like, you know, 30 to 40 clients at least. So
I know you're not a huge fan of Vegas sushi, but what is the best sushi in Vegas today by your standards?
I think it's probably a toss up between Kame and Kabuto. You know, and Kabuto is very good too. Those are the two that I really
love. What's the one like off the beaten path on the other side of the freeway in like a strip mall or something that's pretty good.
Both of them. Both Kame and Kabuto are over there.
One of those is the one that I like. I go with a friend of mine who used to be a performer in Vegas. He retired recently. He was a hypnotist. And whenever I go to lunch or something with him, he'll take me to this place in the strip mall. And it's really, really good sushi.
Yeah, that's probably Kabuto.
And what's that like high-end, really weird Japanese restaurant it's also in a strip mall and it's like really high end, weird stuff. It's not sushi.
Oh, Raku.
Raku. That's it. I don't like it.
You don't like Raku?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the food's good. You know, you just got to know what to order. And
I didn't like, I was like, pointing at the table next to us going, what's that? I'll have one.
Yeah, no, you got to, and you're going to end up with some random dishes. You know, they definitely have a lot of random dishes there, but they have good stuff there. Like the hamachi kama there, which is the jawbone of the yellowtail, was really good. You know,
this doesn't work for me.
Yeah, there's just some people don't like that stuff as much. You know, some people are just more sushi.
Yeah.
There's a new revolving sushi place there that I went to that was pretty cool.
Oh, with the boats where it goes around? Before,
no, they're not boats. This one's like a robot. So it's like a little trail that goes all the way through. And then they have a little robot that drives you out your specific orders.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's called Sapporo. Yeah. The quality of fish there was surprisingly good, you know. I don't tend to usually go to those places unless they're really rated well, but I checked it out. And
where's that place?
It's in the strip mall down by the other ones in Chinatown.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Mm. And
I have to remember that one.
I did 18 plates and it was like under $100.
What? So, that's cheap.
Yeah.
Damn.
$3 a plate. So.
Wow. That's really cheap. Huh?
Yeah.
I'll have to try that one next time I'm there. So New York business still booming?
Insanely booming right now.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's gone. You know, I felt like we had a little bit of a lull for the beginning of December, but yesterday I got like 20 RFQs for stuff. Hmm. And
it just keeps going.
It just keeps going, you know.
So was Was 23 bigger than 22?
Yes.
Like, I'm not asking you your sales. I'm just saying in general, was 23
And
24 looks like it's going to stay big.
I mean, I hope it's as big as 23 was. Yeah. You know, I think it certainly can be. You know, but I definitely feel like there's some clamp down on, but, you know, the shows are still happening. The budgets are getting clamped down a little bit. And like, and we started to really see that the second half of the year. You know, where budgets were, you know, before people were just trying to get somebody to do their show because there was more shows than people could do. So, you know, I definitely think that next year, I mean, next year looks as big so far. You know, I got enough on the list.
What's the problem now? Is it gear or people or still a bit of both?
This year, definitely. I mean, the last 2 years we have gotten to the point where we couldn't do any more gigs, you know, and I think that the, you know, we weren't the only ones, you know, because some of the calls I got were like, hey, we had this gig booked and they just said they can't do it now, you know, so there was a bit of that. And can you do it, you know? And that was, I mean, in 2022, that happened a lot. 2023, it happened less, but still happened. And I'm hearing some grumblings in the spring already. The gear is too tight and that people are already turning down spring jobs.
Interesting.
The shops are like, we can't do it. We can't handle it.
Do most of the people who go out and do your shows, are they staff or are they 1099 contractors?
It depends. You know, it does depend. We started a full-time tech program this year. So we've been adding people to it left and right. Those people, of course, are not 1099. Those are full-time Christie employees. And, you know, I think the program's good for them. I think the program's good for us to have some, you know, real full-time techs.
Yeah, of course.
We do still have some 1099 people. But on my shows, it's not the majority. The majority is all employees.
And do you like, cause I know, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this know that the way that account guys work at Christie is your own boss, basically. Like you're, you're like your own business inside a business. And so do you have like your pocket people that you like for your shows? Like, do you got your A-listers? You get to select, and oh, Bob and John and Mike are going out on this show.
And no, I definitely have my A-listers who work on my shows. And most of them are, you know, highly experienced guys that, you know, I've been working with for years. You know, a lot of times people will be like, oh, why don't you use this cheap guy? And I'm like, it's just not worth it to me. You know, I mean, if somebody wants to train, I'm happy to like throw them as like a, you know, a pusher on shows, but I don't really risk my clientele with, you know, with new guys.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
You know, I mean, if you think about it, like the amount, like, so some of my guys are like double, you know, the rates that, you know, the new guys are getting. And they're like, Chris, why are we paying this guy double? And I'm like, well, how many phone calls do, you know, I break it down to how many phone calls do I get during the show? You know, if I'm getting two phone calls a day from a guy, I might as well just be there myself, you know, and work from there. You know, if I get no phone calls and we don't have to send extra, you know, a truck nowadays to the city is $600. So one new guy's screw up is, you know, I've already lost money in the deal.
No good. No good. So, no bueno.
It's just, you know,
Yeah.
You know, but we're not a production company, so we're certainly not doing, you know, we're not doing what the production companies do, which is, you know, selling a complete product. Yeah. My clients call me up like, I need a head, I need three electricians, and here's the gear list. I'm not deciding how many electricians they get. I'm not deciding how many riggers they want or anything like that.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that you guys didn't do like full production like that.
Yeah, we don't do full production like
that. Oh, I didn't know that.
Really, the key is to not compete with your clients.
Yeah.
And we're probably one of the last shops that doesn't, you know.
Interesting. And you don't get involved in any touring, do you?
I mean, I just do Bruce Springsteen. That's the only one I do.
Oh, well, that's not a bad one, I guess, if you got to do something. I hear he's kind of a thing.
He's pretty popular.
Yeah, I hear he's kind of a thing. Bit of a thing, Mr. Springsteen.
Fills stadiums up. I mean, I've known him for years, but, you know, I just started to handle it. You know, we took over the account this year.
Oh, that's very cool.
And
is it still Jeff? Is still the LD? Yeah.
Yep. Jeff Rabbits is still the LD.
Very cool.
And, you know, we had a good sit down at the beginning, and, you know, what I did for him was, you know, we set up every light he had spec'd in the plot and a bunch of alternatives so he could see everything next to each other. And, you know, no pressure on him whatsoever. We were like, you know, you pick what you want. We're here to support you. And he really liked that. He sort of like, you know, we spent the whole day just walking around with the meter, looking at lights, you know, having them do different things. I had a top level programmer there for him. And, you know, we just spent the whole day checking stuff out and really letting them play with it. He was specking fixtures that he hadn't really used before. So, you know, I was like, hey, let's make sure you're good with this. Let's put it up.
He's such a nice guy, Jeff. I can't see him being too much of a hard ass in that situation. But
no. I mean, he was super. Again, he's one of the classic.
Of course, yeah.
Guys who, I mean, I've known him since I was like 15. So.
Really. I didn't know you did anything with Springsteen.
Yep.
Yeah. I did not know this. Very cool. Anything else, Chris? I know you probably have to get back to that quote that I broke you away from.
Yeah, I was doing like 20 quotes today. It's getting a little crazy. I mean, I think LDI was really amazing this year.
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely going to need to sleep a little bit more before I go. Some people just stayed up for like 2 days straight. I won't mention their names, but I was getting pitched
from Corey Easterbrook. Like
4 and 5 a.m. Like, hey, we're still here.
Yeah. And I'm remember like, those days.
An hour. And he's like, I'm on my way. I'm going to trade my old fashioned for a coffee at Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, my God. I remember those days, but, you know, I got to be honest. I mean, most nights I'm going, I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And boom, I'm up in bed by like 12:30, you know.
The Irish goodbye. Fade away.
Well, you have to. I mean, it's why I used to always try and stay at the Renaissance, because you didn't have to sneak by the bar, because the bar was way over there in the corner, and you could just come in the other door and straight up the elevator, and nobody knew you were there.
I definitely feel like the bar is the best place to see everybody, though.
Oh, you know? It definitely is.
I miss the Peabody, like in Orlando, when we used to do the Peabody.
The Peabody was a blast. That was a blast.
That was great, but the crowd's grown a lot. I mean, I think there was like, there was probably 200-300 people at, you know, at the Resorts World Bar.
Wow.
You know, but again, you had to like scream in people's faces for them to hear you, which was just ridiculous.
Yeah. And the bar tabs get big so fast now too, because like beer is $12 in those lobby bar things, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, and people are ordering, you know.
Yeah, it's $100
because they're on Chris's bar tab, right?
Yeah. So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Was Dearson belly up at the bar?
Was what? Who?
Dearson.
Oh, I didn't see him at the bar.
I mean, he used to be such a fixture at the Hard Rock.
Oh,
I used
yeah.
to love hanging out with Dearson at the Hard Rock.
I hung out with him at the show. It was good to see him. I hung out with him at the TMB booth.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really, too, if you want to see everybody, you can just hang out at the TMB booth and drink all day, and people will filter through, you know, a few at a time.
Yeah, yeah. TMB had a real grown-up booth this year. Jesus.
Yeah.
From the pictures that I saw, anyway. They, like, that was one of the things I thought was cool, and I wouldn't want to be the guy paying for it, but the big booths are back, and the shows are back, and the, you know, it went from these corporate boring lights on podiums booths back to these sort of big glamorous show booths. Oh,
I've definitely been pushing for that for years. If you can't show what your fixture can do, what's really the, like,
but it's expensive, Chris. It's like, like every one of those big companies spent at least $500,000 at that show.
Oh,
at least.
Yeah.
And some of them, I didn't see the booths, but I wouldn't be surprised if Roby was like 750, you know, and like, I mean,
oh, yeah.
And Chauvet, yeah. Chauvet looked pretty wild too in the pictures I saw anyway.
Oh yeah. They had a huge booth with big circular inside. And,
yeah. You know. And the girls on the silk things and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Acrobatics.
Well, I'm jealous. I never ever like sat here going, oh, I wish I was at that trade show, but that show, like, right from Sunday on, I was pouting, you know, and I just kept scrolling through Cosmo pictures on my phone, you know, oh man, Cosmo's with him now. You know, there was one of Cosmo, Wiseman and Nick Jackson. And I was really sad because those are three of my favorites. So yeah, whatever, you do what you got to do. I had to work.
Yeah. Yeah. If you got to work, you got to work. I mean, you got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely think there was also some good networking stuff at the show. You know, there's a lot of discussion right now in the business about nodes and, you know, who makes the best node and, you know, a lot of my theater shows, they're using all the Pathport nodes. On a lot of my rock shows, they want the Luma nodes, which is interesting, you know.
Interesting. And, why?
I think that a lot of people want the Pathport nodes because the control's right on the face. So you can really, you can set patch up, you can, you know, patch the network directly on the unit. Okay. It also has a web interface that you can use. On the Luminex, you have to use the web interface.
Hmm. And you would think that touring people would want the one that you can control on the face.
Right, right. Well, the theater touring people do.
Yeah.
But the rock touring people
want it
seem to. Yeah, they want to just open up their laptop and, you know, plug in and do stuff much quicker than, you know, hit the button once, then hit this button and hit that button, and then
remember dip button. Switches.
Oh, of course I do.
God, I never got that math right till the very end of time on dip switches. I still never got it. Well, 1 + 1 = 3 or whatever it was, you know, like I just could never figure it out. I was like, I don't get this system. You know, it's like the Dewey Decimal system in libraries.
I used to keep a card in my wallet, a laminated card. A cheat card that had the dip switches in my wallet.
God, those were annoying. I hated those things. Hated them.
Let's see, any other earth-shattering things that I missed? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, clay packies, you know, they came out with them, the Xylos and the Aqua, and now they have a new mini version, you know, the laser source products.
Yeah.
And I think they're great. I mean, at one point we were trying to find a sub for an Aqua, and there's nothing in the same weight class that does what it does.
Yeah.
It's the lightest fixture for the most output, for the most, you know, abilities for that little fixture to do stuff.
Yeah.
And they have a half size one. So they got the bigger one and then they got a little one.
I remember hearing something where Clay Packy was at least suggesting that they no longer needed variants.
In Europe and Canada, they do not need a variance. Well,
Europe never did. You could always point a 100-watt laser right at the crowd and nobody cared.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an American who puts lasers under the FDA, for one, you know?
Right, Right. Well, and that I think is the problem with the whole variance thing is that, you know, the FDA doesn't want to give up, you know, getting its checks or its control.
Right. No. Yeah, that's the thing about government. Once you give them control, they don't give it back very easily, do they?
No, you definitely. They're definitely bastards. Fighting tooth and nail for the whole variance thing.
I don't remember who told me. I thought it was Noel who told me that that Clay Packy had some deal with the U.S. where now they weren't going to need a variance anymore. But I don't know.
Maybe we still need it. We have them on tour. We have it, like Christy Lights has a variance, so we take care of most of it for our clients. You know, we fill out the paperwork and send it in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
You know, but we do have to have sort of, you know, a teaching day with the people. And then, you know, you're supposed to file all your stuff 30 days in advance, you know, so they know.
Now, listen, do you think it's as dumb as I think it is? Because, like, have you ever been hit in the face with a Sharpie from like 8 feet away or whatever? It'll burn your friggin' retinas.
I've been hit by a Xylo 8 feet away.
Yeah.
I've been hit by a Sharpie 8 feet away.
Yeah.
Still can see fine.
Yeah. And, no, but what I'm saying is probably a Sharpie does more damage to your retinas than...
There are brighter lights. There are lights that are putting out more lumens.
It's just because it's called a laser, you know, and laser correct. Video projectors nobody has any trouble with for some reason. They don't blind people, but
right. Yeah. Strangely, they don't require a variance. So there you go.
Well, the argument that I heard is they're typically not aimed at the audience. You know, projectors are like above people's heads and aimed away from you, not at you.
Right.
I don't know. I ain't buying it.
Well, if you don't have a variance, how do you know where they're aimed?
There you go. I could aim a projector at the audience if I wanted to. And you know, you got 20K laser projectors or whatever, like, you know, those have some punch.
Those are even brighter.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
You know, and you know, I mean, nobody's blind in Canada and nobody's blind in Europe from any of these products.
Yeah.
So it's
Well, I mean, Europe literally forever. Like I remember when I used to go to the trade show in Rimini. Have you ever been to that one?
No, I haven't been to that one.
That's fun. I don't even know if they still run it, but it used to be every year, and it was in, if I remember correctly, probably like April or something every year. Mm-hmm. And Rimini, I don't know if you know, but it's a little seaside town in Italy.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
And it's off season, so you can get in any of the restaurants and stuff. You'd go there and like all of these laser booths would have these like 50 or 100 watt lasers just blasting you right in the face. And then you'd go to the clubs at night and they'd have lasers blasting you right in the face. And I was always like, why can we only have 4.9 right. milliwatts, you know? And these guys, they're like burning holes in the carpet.
People are like falling out of the clubs with their eyes burnt out.
Yeah. It's so
stupid. Did you hear about this thing in China where they were one of the big Bitcoin companies had a convention out there, and they put UVC lamps instead of black lights up, and they fried like 300 people's eyes.
No.
Like people in the hospital. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What were they thinking?
I assume, you know, they probably had some, you know, like sterilization lights in the shop and some black lights. And somebody grabbed the wrong one and put them on the truck. Wow. You know, and they hung them and they turned them on.
Do they sue people in China? Because somebody got sued for that one.
I don't think so. But there were people in the hospital like the next day.
That is crazy. I hadn't heard that.
Had their eyes bandaged up, like, you know.
Yeah, that stuff's bad. Like I remember Chris Aisen during COVID was redoing the CT, their studio or whatever, and they were putting in all the UVC stuff. And I remember him saying that you'd set it up like the night before and run it for however many hours you were supposed to run it or whatever. And he said over a period of a few days, you were starting to already see like the casing on cables like sort of just becoming brittle and breaking. And it was just like what that did to the floors and to the cabling and stuff in the studios. He said, I can't even imagine what it does to your eyes. You know, like it's nasty stuff, that UVC.
It is. I mean, supposedly it doesn't cause permanent blindness, but it definitely, you know, people were in the hospital for days.
Well, and then there's the other one, Far UV, I think it's called, where you can, humans can be in the same room and stuff. It doesn't affect us.
There were a couple of stores in the city that did the Far UVC, but there wasn't a lot of proof that it killed the viruses. Yeah.
Oh, trust us. We're with the government.
Yeah. We're with a company that's selling something.
Yeah, true. Well, and you know, Peter Johansson's out there selling UVC stuff, so it must be safe, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Phillips need the ball. It must be safe.
Oh God. Yeah. All right, Chris. Well, I have to go, but I appreciate you jumping on and doing this today. I know you're super friggin' busy with your end stuff, and it's always nice to see you and talk to you.
Always a pleasure, Marcel.
Hopefully
you're coming next year to LDI.
Oh, hell yeah. I missed my one two out of whatever, 30 years or however long they've been doing it. You know, not a bad run, but I hated missing it. I really did, you know, but.
I think I missed it a couple times. One, my daughter was born that month.
That was probably a good choice.
Yeah. And then one other year, I'm not sure why I missed it that other year. Yeah, but I think I missed like 2 years since 97.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, you be well. And if I don't talk to you before Christmas, have an amazing holiday. And
yeah, Merry Christmas
with your family. Keep sending me recipes, sous vide recipes. I need some sous vide recipes because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I've been buying this Oshii salmon, though. Have you tried it
yet? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good salmon.
Oshii is good salmon, and their prices aren't ridiculous. They had a Black Friday sale where it was like 25% off, so I bought like $200 worth of salmon. Their salmon is
Have you ever checked out the Seattle Pike Place Fish Market has an online thing they do?
No, I haven't.
You get really good salmon there. I've gotten salmon there for Christmas before, like, and sent it to people.
I'm sure it's easy for you in New York, but for some reason here in South Florida, we can't get salmon anymore. I mean, you can get farmed salmon, but you can't get anything good.
Yeah, the wild salmon. Well, it's seasonal, so you only can get it, you know, we're pretty much at the end of the season.
I mean, in the grocery stores here, you can almost never get line-caught salmon. Fresh, wild-caught salmon. You can never get it. It's just impossible. And so I tripped over this Oshii company and I've been really, really super happy with their quality and prices aren't terrible. And so, yeah, we've been eating a lot of salmon and we keep trying to do it in the sous vide, but we just suck at it. So I'm waiting for some recipes here, mister. Okay, I keep going to my girlfriend and going, look at what Chris made tonight. Why does our food look like shit? His looks amazing. Yeah. I love that device. It's just, you know what? Like, I'll tell you what, vegetables, like we just slice up Brussels sprouts and cauliflower and carrots and maybe some onions or mushrooms or something. And she puts, I don't know what she puts on it, but a bunch of different spices. And it's amazing. It's the best vegetables. We eat them almost every night. It's nice. So good in the sous vide. But I mean, other than that.
I do roasted broccoli in the sous vide. Like you cut broccoli up, you coat it with some olive oil or ghee, whatever your flavor of choice is, butter or, you know, a little grassier, salt, pepper, mix it in a bowl together. So you get it like thoroughly coated.
Yeah.
You put it in the sous vide for 30 minutes at 350.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Oh, I'll try it. I'll try it tonight, maybe with some salmon.
There you go.
All right, Chris. Thanks, buddy. Okay. Good to see you, buddy. All right, see ya.